Last week we studied the how Jesus selected his 12 men that would eventually become his apostles. Men who were willing to leave home, leave their occupations, leave their families behind, and go with Jesus to fulfill a mission that he had that would affect the entire world for the end of time. This week we'll look at how Jesus took those 12 men that he chose and how he trained them. 12 uneducated men with faulty character into faithful messengers of the gospel. Last week we saw how Jesus spent the first 6 months of his 3-year ministry being baptized by John, spending 40 days in the wilderness, and then performing his first miracle. All of that happened up in the area of Galilee. And it took about 6 months for that to happen, and then he left and went down to the area of Jerusalem, and he spent another year down there. In a couple minutes, we'll be looking at John, the 6th chapter, where we're told Jesus feeds the 5,000 people, and John mentions in 6:4 that it's time for the second Passover. So by the time Jesus is finished in Jerusalem and goes back up to the area of Galilee, it's been a year and a half, about 18 months, give or take. The Gospels pick up the narrative when Jesus moves back up north, and Matthew describes it this way, Matthew 4:12. When Jesus had heard that John the Baptist was cast into prison, he departed into Galilee, and he came and dwelt in Capernaum, which is by the seacoast. So Jesus moves from Jerusalem and Judea, the areas where he spent a year, and goes back to Galilee. The second half of his ministry is going to be another 18 months. And we know more about that 18 months than we do the first 18 months, because those events are recorded thoroughly in the four Gospels. So what is the first thing that Jesus does when he gets to Galilee? He chooses 4 of the future apostles. Matthew 4:18-22. And Jesus, walking by the Sea of Galilee, saw 2 brethren, Simon, called Peter, and Andrew his brother, and he said unto them, "Follow me, I will make you fishers of men." They were fishing at the time. And in verse 20, it says he saw James and John and called them to follow him. So those are the first four men that he chooses who will eventually become his apostles. Don't think you could probably see this well, better than I thought you would. Part of the training, and that's what we're talking about tonight, is how Jesus trained his apostles. Part of the training of the apostles were the miracles that he performed. And most of his miracles occurred in the second half of his ministry, the second 18 months. He did 37 miracles according to this chart, and that red line is where he chose his apostles. So 10 of the miracles are recorded before he chose his apostles, 27 after. So it was definitely part of his training for the apostles. The miracles proved a lot of things. Most of them were for healing. While those who received the healing were relieved of their physical ailments, the purpose of those miracles were not really to do that. I mean, it did help them, but in most cases, the miracles of healing were to present a greater truth to the people that not only were healed, but the people that observed that. He cast out demons, and the miracles emphasized that he had the control over Satan's demons because he was the Son of God. And some of the miracles emphasized Jesus' authority over nature when he walked on the water in Matthew 8:27, or when he calmed the storm. The disciples were amazed and asked, "What kind of man is this? Even the winds and the waves obey him." Jesus never performed miracles for the sake of putting on a show. It wasn't something that he was doing for entertainment. Every miracle pointed to a greater truth. The purpose of miracles was to prove that he was the Son of God. No one but the Son of God could do the miracles that he did. The miracles were very impressive, but they did have a negative side to them. The feeding of the 5,000 is just one example of the negative things that happen as a result of miracles. John describes it this way, starting in verse 2. Jesus went over the Sea of Galilee, and a great multitude followed him because they saw his miracles. That's why they went over there, which he did on them that were diseased. Jesus went up to the mountain, and there he sat down with his disciples. I think Jesus probably thought he could get away and have a quiet time to train and teach his disciples, his four. But actually, in verse 5 it says, "Lifting up his eyes and seeing that great large crowd was coming toward him, he said to Philip, 'Where are we to buy bread so that these people may eat?'" Now listen to this. "He said this to test him, for he himself knew what he would do. Philip said, 'Well, we don't have enough money to feed all of these people.' And Philip, being a good planner and mathematician, had already calculated in his mind how many people there were and how much money it would take. So he gave Jesus the most logical answer to him: we don't have enough funds to do that." That wasn't the answer that Jesus was wanting. You remember having teachers that threw pop quizzes at you? That's what Jesus was doing with Philip. He wanted to see what his answer would be when he asked how to feed these people. But, verse 8, Simon Peter said to him, "There is a boy here who has 5 barley loaves and 2 fish. But what are they for so many people?" So Jesus did a miracle. He took the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, and he fed 5,000 people. Now, you might think that's a good thing. But the morning after feeding the 5,000, people came looking for Jesus. And we find Jesus is not impressed and confronts them for their selfish motives. In verse 26, he said, "Truly, I tell you, you are looking for me not because you saw the signs I performed, but because you ate the loaves and had your fill." They were seeking Jesus because they had a free meal as a result of his miracle. Jesus says, "You didn't see the signs. You didn't see the purpose. You didn't see why I did that miracle. You didn't get the message." The message for his miracles was, "I am the Son of God. Nobody can do the things that I do in miracles if they aren't the Son of God." That's the message. That's the sign. 37 miracles seems like a lot. But John tells us in John 20:30-31, "Many other signs did Jesus in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book. But these are written that you might believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing you may have life through his name." That was why he did miracles. And that is why we have a record of him in the Bible. So we can believe that Jesus was the Son of God. And by believing in him, we can have eternal life. Last week we learned in Matthew, the 4th chapter, that the first 4 men called, Peter, Andrew, James, and John, followed him because he promised to make them fishers of men. And Matthew tells us in the next verse about the period of training that these men went through. Matthew 4:23. And Jesus went about all Galilee, teaching in their synagogues and preaching the gospel of the kingdom, and healing all manner of sickness and all manner of disease among the people. And his fame went throughout all Syria, and they brought unto him all kinds of sick people. This period of training, with the first four that he chose, is referred to as the first Galilean tour. So he made a trip around and taught in different synagogues and did different miracles. But the only people, the only future apostles, were the first four that went with him on that. We're going to find that he does this again, and we'll revisit his training of his apostles with this kind of traveling trip. The Bible doesn't tell us specifically a lot of details about how he chose a lot of the future apostles, but it appears that there was an extended period of time until Jesus found 12 men who he wanted to work with, who he wanted to be close companions with. But Luke tells us that when that time was right, Jesus selected the 12 apostles in Luke 6:12. And it came to pass in those days that Jesus went out into a mountain to pray and continued all night in prayer to God. And when it was day, he called unto him his disciples, and out of them, remember, disciples has a couple different meanings, out of the large group of followers that were following him, he chose 12 whom he named apostles. Then Matthew tells us Jesus went into a tremendous period of training. And we call this the Sermon on the Mount, and it's recorded in Matthew 5. And seeing the multitudes, the people, the followers, the disciples, you could call them, he went up to them to the mountain, and when he was set, his disciples came unto him, and he opened his mouth and taught them, saying. So the Sermon on the Mount is in front of a multitude of disciples, but it includes the 12 apostles. He's already appointed the 12 apostles before the Sermon on the Mount. I'm sure that he addressed a lot of things, which we'll illustrate on the next slide, that would be good for the multitude, but I'm sure it was specifically designed to introduce these 12 to something that they'd never heard before. This is a list of all the topics that he covered. The Sermon on the Mount is 3 chapters long. It's the longest sermon or training period that Jesus gave, and it begins with 8 Beatitudes, which are short sayings that all start with blessed, which means happy. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And he gives 7 more situations that would result in a blessing or happiness. Then he compared the old law with the new law that he was going to give them. Verse 21, you have heard that it is said by them of old time, thou shalt not kill, and whosoever shall kill shall be in danger of the judgment. But I say unto you, that whosoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment. So he's training his 12 apostles and many other followers a wide variety of topics. At the end of the Sermon on the Mount, in chapter 7, verse 28 and 29, this statement is made. When Jesus had finished saying these things, the crowds, the multitude of disciples, were amazed at his teaching, because he taught as one who had authority, and not as their teachers, the Jewish teachers of the law. The Jewish leaders during the time of Jesus was on earth were the teachers of the law, but they didn't follow the law. They left a poor example for the people. And so when the people heard Jesus talking and saying these things on the Sermon on the Mount, it was very impressive and they really believed on him and were encouraged by the things that he taught. So this is a wonderful training for 12 men that are going to be his apostles. They sit down on this mountainside, and he gives them all of this new information and probably too much information. They probably didn't understand it, most of it. But they would learn. He's going to teach them. These things are going to become real for them. Now that Jesus has chosen his 12 men, after the Sermon on the Mount, he goes on a second Galilean tour. This is an interesting passage for a couple of reasons. First of all, listen to the people that accompany Jesus on this second Galilean tour. Luke 8:1. Soon afterwards, he went on through cities and villages, proclaiming and bringing the good news of the kingdom of God, and the 12 were with him. So all 12 of the apostles are with him. And also some women who had been healed of evil spirits and infirmities. Mary, called Magdalene, from whom 7 demons had gone out. Joanna, the wife of Cusa, Herod's household manager. And Susanna, and many others. But listen to this statement. He lists these women, and then he says, those who provided for them out of their means. Have you ever wondered how Jesus and the apostles survived traveling around and where they got their money for lodging and food? Well, here's the verse that tells you. The disciples, those traveling with him, those following him place to place, trying to learn from him, were supporting him. They provided for them out of their means, that verse told us. These disciples had to be people who were financially able to leave their homes, their occupations, and travel long distances sometimes with Jesus. And when they did, they shared their possessions, their money, they supported his work. Luke tells us that on the second tour of Galilee, they were supported by several women that were particularly blessed by Jesus' miracles, casting 7 demons out of Mary Magdalene, for instance. And I think it's a good training because these disciples learned a valuable lesson that they were going to be supported by the people that they were going to train. You see a lot of people on television today who are delivering sermons, but their main motive, you get the feeling that it's probably money. The apostles didn't go out from Jesus with that in mind at all. And this might have been one of those experiences that taught them that they were in this work for a different purpose. Certainly not financial gain. They were going to be supported by other disciples. The other thing that happens on the second tour of Galilee is that Jesus starts teaching in parables. This was such a dramatic break in the way he normally taught that in Matthew 13:10 it tells us the disciples came and said to him, "Why speakest thou unto them in parables?" And he answered and said to them, "Because it is given unto you," you, the apostles, "is given unto you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but unto them it is not given. Therefore I speak to them in parables, because they seeing see not, and hearing they hear not, neither do they understand." Jesus has come to a point in his ministry where he's tired of this, these Jewish leaders telling lies about him, even plotting to kill him. He's tired of all that. So he's going to be teaching some new revelations about the mysteries that have been held from the Old Testament, and he's going to tell those mysteries to to other people, but particularly to his apostles, because he's going to reveal things that has never been revealed before about the kingdom of God. That's a training period that he has with his apostles. The parables are a training period. So the miracles didn't work that well. I mean, it worked well because when people saw his miracles, they certainly believed. Remember his first miracle when he turned water to wine? It says that the four that were with him then saw the miracle and they believed. So miracles was a convincing training period, but it didn't get the results that he wanted, and that was he wanted people to recognize who he was based on those miracles. So on the first Galilean tour, the first four men that he chose accompanied him. I think that was a very special time where he was able to get on one-on-one with those first four, and that was probably why they were so close to him, because they were in his special inner circle. And the second tour, Mark, the second tour was with all 12. And then the third is in Mark 6:7-13. Put it this way. And he called unto him the 12 and began to send them forth by two and two and gave them power over unclean spirits. He commanded, listen to this, he commanded they should take nothing for their journey save a staff and sandals. He keeps teaching them that lesson. Money isn't the issue, is it? It isn't going to be a problem. Verse 10, and he said unto them, in whatever place you enter into the house, there abide till you depart from that place. And whosoever shall not receive you, nor hear you, when you depart thence, shake off the dust under your feet for a testimony against them. Verily I say unto you, it shall be more tolerable for Sodom and Gomorrah in the day of judgment than for that city. And they went out and preached that men should repent. And they cast out many devils and anointed with oil many that were sick and healed them. These 12 men who are now apostles are going out two by two, and they're going to be doing the things that he expects them to do once he leaves this earth. They're teaching, they're doing miracles, they're establishing their authority with people that they come in contact with. They are more familiar and intimate with Jesus than anybody else on earth. They sit at his feet. They've received his words of training. They heard...
Sorry, I couldn't quite hear you.
Oh, Siri.
Could you please repeat what you said?
I didn't touch you. They heard his new doctrine at the Sermon on the Mount. They saw his miracles and were convinced that he was the Son of God. They were trained by Jesus to carry on the public work of spreading the message. And now it's time for the apostles to begin the work. Any questions or comments to this point?
Other people that are there whose lives are completely changed because they've encountered Christ. even today we are witnessing that same way, the way our lives used to be, and the way that after Jesus has entered our life, the way our people live now, the gospel testimony is a good thing that Jesus does.
Good. Made a couple of good points there. Number one is that he taught them a lot by example. Going out and praying by himself for hours, sometimes all night. His apostles observed that. So he taught them a lot about praying in that instance. And the fact that we have the miracles, we have the parables, we can read those. They should be lessons to us about Christ and about the future of the kingdom. Any other comments or questions? Jesus trained these men on a very personal and often on a private basis. He lived with the 12. He traveled with the 12. His life was intertwined with the 12. Let's look at a few examples of Jesus' private training with these 12. In Luke 11, the disciples asked Jesus to teach them to pray. Verse 1, and it came to pass that as Jesus was praying, he was already praying, he was already being an example of prayer. When he ceased, one of his disciples said to him, Lord, teach us to pray as John also taught his disciples. And he said unto them, when you pray, say, Our Father which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. And he goes on to show them things that should be included in a prayer. He gave them this sample prayer, and then he followed that prayer with a real-life example to sort of illustrate what he was telling. Verse 5, and he said to them, which of you who has a friend will go to him at midnight and say to him, Friend, lend me 5 loaves for a friend of mine who has arrived on a journey, and I have nothing to set before him. Jesus asked his parables. Would your friend get up? Would that neighbor get up and give the person what he needed? Of course he would. He wouldn't deny him that. He wouldn't say, go away, I'm already in bed asleep. Nope, they'd get up. So Jesus explains that God will be give the same kind of response in when a prayer is offered. Verse 9, and I say unto you, ask, and it shall be given you. Seek, and ye shall find. Knock, and it shall be opened unto you. For everyone that asks receives, and he that seeks finds. To him that knocks, it shall be opened. So he gave him an illustration of what a prayer would continue and would be, and then he gave him a real-life illustration. He says, that's the way the Father is going to treat you if you ask in prayers to the Father. Okay, my computer just isn't working well tonight. So he had a lot of private times with his apostles. And I think that's an excellent example for us in training others. In those times, he could talk to his apostles about struggles that they were having. What kind of situations were they dealing with? And one of the trips to Capernaum, Mark 9:33 says, they came to Capernaum, and when he, Jesus, was in the house, he asked them, what were you discussing on the way? But they kept silent. For on the way, they had argued with one another about who was the greatest. And he sat down and called the 12 and said to them, if anyone would be first, he must be last of all and servant of all. And again, Jesus gives them an example to illustrate what he's trying to train them. Verse 36, and he took a child and put him in the midst of them, and taking him in his arms, he said to them, Whoever receives one such child in my name receives me, and whoever receives me receives not me, but him who sent me. Today, we would call this a teachable moment. Something happens, something your child says or does, so you take the time to share with them an important lesson from that moment, a teachable moment. Jesus took time to sit down with the 12 and to share his thoughts on an issue that the 12 had been arguing about. And their personal private training moment with Jesus made them comfortable enough, made John comfortable enough to share another struggle that he was having. Verse 38, and John asked him, Master, we saw one casting out devils in thy name, and he follows not us. And we forbade him because he follows not us. Meaning, this man was casting out demons, but he wasn't part of the apostles. He wasn't in that group. But Jesus said, forbid him not, for there is no man which shall do a miracle in my name that can lightly speak evil of me. For he that is not against us is on our part. The ESV translation says, For one who is not against us is for us. I confess that I'm probably just like some of you. When I hear people on television or radio, and I know they're not a part of the Church of Christ, but what they're saying is biblical. It's true. But I challenge their sincerity. I challenge what they're saying, not because it isn't true, but because they're not a part of us. Shame on me. Jesus says, if a person's doing good, if a person is teaching the truth, that's a good thing. From an earthly or human point of view, some people might say the training program with these 12 men looked like a failure, a monumental failure, because the first thing to indicate this is after Jesus was betrayed, Matthew 26:56, it tells us all the disciples forsook him and fled. Wow, months of training down the drain. The second illustration I want to consider is found in Luke 24. But like the other classes, our time has gotten away from us, and I'm not going to get into that because I have a lot of long explanation. But the point of that illustration was that Jesus had told his apostles that he was going to be crucified, he would raise the third day, and yet after he was crucified, placed in the tomb, Mary Magdalene went to the tomb and saw that it was empty, and she thought maybe somebody had stolen his body, but there was an angel outside that tomb, and he said, do you remember what Jesus told you before he died, that he would be raised on the third day? That's what's happened. So she goes back and tells the apostles. Well, Peter and John had a foot race to the tomb, and it's recorded in the book of John, and so John makes a point of saying, I was the first there. I won the race. I'm just teasing. I think that's an interesting part of a lot of things that are in the Bible, some personal issue. But what happens is that he and John and Peter arrive at the tomb. Peter went in first, because John, when he got there, he didn't want to go in. But Peter got there, and he went into the tomb, saw what had happened, saw the linens laying there and folded, and says that that Peter believed. He remembered that Jesus said he was going to be raised on the third day. He believed that this is what happened. John went in. I'm sorry, I got that backwards. Peter came following John and went in the tomb. Peter saw the linens laying there and folded in place. And then the other, the eighth verse says that John saw and believed. Well, I take from that that Peter didn't, or he didn't remember. He didn't understand what this empty tomb really meant. So you might think that this training that they went through for 18 months, one-on-one with Jesus, was a monumental failure, but it wasn't. He taught them what they needed to know to carry on and do what he needed done after he left, because the apostles are the foundation of the church, and the church still exists today. So they were successful. They were worthy of the challenge that Jesus gave them. And we're thankful that that turned out to be true. Any questions while the children are coming up?